Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How much is a pint of milk?
I never buy milk.
Oh, how much is a pint of almond milk?
I don't know. I bought one today and I don't look at the price. Because I'm an affluent person and I don't care. I went to Sainsbury's and I just bought a thing of almond milk. Do you look at the prices of things?
Absolutely not.
No, see? So shut up. Hello, everybody. I'm Alan Cumming.
I'm Christopher Sweeney.
And you're listening to, of course, you know that unless you're dopey, Homo Sapiens.
Absolutely correct.
Season 4 podcast. Who's our guest today?
Jake Shears of the Scissor Sisters.
That's right. That's quite hard to say. Jake Shears of the Scissor Sisters.
Who actually calls himself Jason?
His name's Jason Sellards.
Sellards, like, yes.
It's a funny thing.
Ray of sunshine is what I'm going to say.
Like a darling.
Yeah.
A darling boy.
Really wonderful. And do you know what? The first time I ever met him I was on a date with someone. Oh my God, I was on a date with someone and then I changed date during the actual thing.
Oh, I've done that.
Have you?
Yeah. Where was this? What country?
UK. Uh-huh. The Scissor Sisters show at...
So you went with someone to a Scissor Sisters show and then you were left with somebody else.
Someone hit on me who I preferred at the Scissor Sisters show and then I started dating them afterwards. What a cheeky scoundrel I am.
You're a man with needs.
But
and how did you like give the person you brought, did you just say, I'm going to go off with this person? What did you say?
No, because I didn't leave with the other person. I just, it's all coming back to me now. So I went with someone on a date.
Yeah.
And he was a violinist. And he wanted me to go back to his flat. He was in a violin duo, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wanted me to go back to his hotel room to stay in his bed with him and his straight friend, but not in a sexual sense.
Wait. So you're going to have sex with him, but not with
us? He was like, oh, well, you can just sleep in my bed even though we're sharing a room. And I was like, I'm not going to do that.
Why are you going to do that?
I know.
Why would he want that?
I don't know. We were like fucking 24. Didn't know.
Have you ever done it? Like, have you ever had sex in the room with someone and there's somebody else in the room?
I don't think I have. Have you?
Yeah.
And did the other person in the room find out?
Well, sometimes. I mean, one of the. Yes. I've done it a few times. Anyway, so you didn't do that. You said, no, I don't want to go back to your hotel room and sleep with you in a bed next to your straight violinist partner.
Mid negotiations, exactly. Enter stage left.
And over your shoulder, you're like giving it.
New guy.
Winking at
new guy.
And what did he, what was his quirk?
He was an American. So
the new world.
He, an American comes up to me and goes, hello, my name's ... Who are you? And was just really forward with me. And I was like, oh, that's really attractive. It sounds a lot simpler than this.
Yeah.
So off I went. Off I skipped to Bermondsey with him, probably a few days later. Still in touch.
That night you didn't do it?
No.
So home on your own?
I don't think so. God knows.
And then so you met Jason that night. Yes, do you know where I first met Jason?
Go on.
I first met him in New York City. I can't remember because he... used to go out with my husband's ex-boyfriend.
Right.
Yeah, in fact, he went out with this person, Joe, after they split up.
Oh, okay.
And he was, at that point, a dancer, a go-go boy in bars in East Village. And just a, you know, lovely boy. And then he started to write songs and started to have a band. And then all of a sudden, this is where this thing was taking off. And
yeah,
it's so funny.
But it's not to be, it's almost like, because it's not to be underestimated. What they were doing was kind of incredible at the time, you know, and like they were bringing back a queerness into big mainstream yeah. pop that we hadn't, we just had lost since Elton and all the rest of it. Like, it yes. had gone. And
no, exactly.
They were amazing. And I think the tendrils of their effect have been huge. Like, a lot of people, even like the people who worked with, for example, who when I worked with doing music videos with Lily Allen, like a lot of her people were actually Scissor Sisters people. You know, that kind of yes. creativity absolutely. Had long arms. And that's why I think
yes. he... And that was what was so amazing that they did have that huge explosion of success, because it meant that that creativity and that queerness and was dormant and was now having an outlet.
And fun, you know, it's just fun.
It was
just
really great fun. Such fun. Their concerts were so uproarious and cheeky. And Jason is this really, like you say, he is a ray of light, and he is this, you know, he's still in that. I just love being around him. He's always got such positive energy. He comes to Club Cumming, my bar in New York City, and sings sometimes and just gets up and has a wee sing song.
Well, Lisa, yeah, with all these people who've done incredible stuff, then in fact they're just incredibly relaxed and charming cool. And cool, and yeah. you know, no one can embody that kind of impact. So we love him, and yeah. we're going to hear
and
from
it's
him.
It's a very lovely chat coming up, but first of all, it's time for
Agony Uncles.
Agony Uncles.
The first question is from S. My friend refuses to be happy for my new relationship. What's going on there, boys?
Refuses is an interesting word. Not just isn't, but mm-hmm. refuses. Mm-hmm. Well, it's obviously there's some blockage.
Yeah. Have you tried a Gaviscon?
A what?
Gaviscon.
I don't know what that is.
You know, like Alka-Seltzer.
But constipation.
Yeah,
I never have any problem with. I'm
regular.
Like, that's all. That's crazy.
That's all the vegetables.
Vegan.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Meat mucks yeah. it up.
Ugh, rotting carcass inside your body. Anyway, mm-hmm. It seems to me that there's some jealousy or something going on. I think the interesting word is refuses to be. What was it?
Happy for my new relationship. What's going on there?
Well, I think you need to have a chat.
Friends should always be happy for you, no matter what's going on in your life, and supportive.
Well, unless the person is in fucking nutcase. But it sounds like the fact they're saying they're refusing to be happy for you.
It means they're not a friend.
Yeah, I mean, it means that there's something. Something that needs to be addressed. Because if they were just that they're not happy for you, you think, oh, well, they don't need to be happy. But they're refusing to be happy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's, to me, there's something. If there's some. As you say, a need for emotional Gaviscon. Is it like the town in Gaviscon. Texas? Gavis what?
Gaviscon.
Gaviscon.
You don't get that in the States.
I don't know. I've never heard of it.
In the state. I mean,
I'm in London right now. I am cognizant of these.
That's true.
English methods that, of, you know.
Smoothing the.
Prunes and stuff.
Prunes and things.
Emotional now. Prunes are needed.
Now,
next question, please.
Okay. my family rely on me for money. What can I do? Stop the direct debit.
Stop the what?
The direct debit.
Well, I mean, what can you do? Earn some more money to help them? I don't know. It's a little sketchy with the details there.
Well, rely on me. So I think what they're saying is...
You don't want to have to be relied on.
Well, I had this with someone I worked with, was explaining this, about how they were the breadwinner for their wider family. And it was a real stress. And I think that two things spring to mind. I was involved in a discussion about this not that long ago, along the lines of, look, you want to support your family,
yeah.
right? You want to help them. But at the same time, like, they're not your responsibility. You do have to try and work out where the boundary is. Then,
yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Again, sorting out. It's just, again, it's discussion and sorting out the rules.
Yeah.
But I mean, if they rely on you and you... I mean, I guess that's an extra stress. I guess you can just say, let's try and work this out. Let's try and make a system where we, you know. But I mean, I do think there's a thing that I've been in situations where supporting people financially.
Right.
And it's kind of different though, because I don't really, I don't mind.
I mean, I owe you and a lot of money.
Well, for all these coffees and Pret a Manger and chocolate cookies, I owe you a fortune. But I actually think it's only a problem. And also, I think you know, money is an interesting thing. And it's I'm always fascinated about how people deal with money.
Yeah.
I have a very, I think, a healthy attitude towards money because I like it, but I never assume it's always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I use it to do the things I like and to help people and to have a nice time and to do, you know, good things, hopefully too, and have a nice life. But if it all were to change, I didn't have as much money as I do now, I would be happy to. Mm. I mean, I really don't. So I think, you know, money is something that can do good things and you can help your family, but also it could go away. And so you have to think, well, how would we cope without that?
Yeah, and I think this person needs to work out, so my family rely on me for money, what can I do? You need to work out how much you can afford to help them and mm-hmm. explain that to them.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to sort of say, here's your allowance. You have to say, this is how much I can do. It stress me out if I give you more. And
then say, sorry, it's only a tenner, and then run off.
That's right, yeah. Here's a postal order.
One quick final one?
Yeah, why not?
Why are transphobes so dedicated to ignorance? George Galloway has outed himself as one.
Oh, don't even get me started with George Galloway.
I agree. I think...
Look, I'm horrified about George Galloway. Do you want to know why?
Please.
Because 1,000 years ago, when he became the Member of Parliament for Hill Head in Glasgow, when he was in the Labour Party,
mm-hmm.
I and my friend Forbes Mason were, as a comedy act called Victor and Barry, performed at his victory party. And it just fills me with bile to think that it shouldn't, because he wasn't the awful person he is now then.
Yeah.
He's just, I don't know, I seriously wonder if there's something, you know, there's some mental illness there, because it seems like goes out of his way to say the most incendiary, repulsive things. Mm-hmm. And it's just a need for attention in a way that is so alarming to me. And mm-hmm. I just think, oh, come on. And it starts to get really, he's very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just see him in that awful clip with lovely Rulalenska when he's being a cat or something. Do you remember that?
Oh, I do remember that. Yes, yes, yes.
I think politicians should not be allowed to go on reality shows.
Yes, I agree with that big time. My advice would be, Worry's going to have these people saying terrible things. Just try and ignore them and go take yourself to people who are doing good things. For example, someone like Munro Bergdorf, trans activist, exactly. British trans activist. She's amazing.
And our guest this week, Mr. Jason Sellard / Mr. Jake Shears.
Yes.
And also I would just like to say, what I would say to is, like, if I saw George Galloway now, I would say, remember the person you were, remember the values you had, remember what you stood for all those years ago when I performed at your victory party, when you became an MP in Glasgow. What happened? Where are they now? That's the person that you should be. And that's what you should say to people who are transphobes and things. Say, remember that time you did a decent thing and you were kind to someone? That's how you should be to trans people.
Yeah.
Oh, wouldn't it be good to get George Galloway on the show? Wouldn't it be good to do a season when it was all just awful people? And we would like smother them with love and then
give them Lala to cuddle.
Give them Lala and give them a free t-shirt. Which you can buy at alancumming.com/shop. Click on a picture of me and you'll save all that ever bright
nonsense.
Hashtag, you know, Etsy, blah, blah.
So now if you want to listen to Jake Shears, head to everpress.com / here you go.
Here he is.
I have these nights by myself sometimes when I just like drink and smoke and maybe do some poppers and like listen to like a record from top to bottom and just like dance around with the speaker and just
such
like
fun.
I love it. Like those I love those nights where I just kind of little spend them alone.
I left and you have plural of those nights. I never get a night to spend on my own listening to a record all the time and doing poppers.
Katie, put that in the calendar. Yes,
I'd have to schedule it.
Those moments are, it's like really important to me. Those times, sometimes I'll just like sit around and like, you know, like cry to like a pretty album or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's very like, but my dad, Linda Ronstadt was the one artist that my father liked. He was the one singer that my dad, you know, had an affinity for until she spoke out, I think, on a stage in Las Vegas 20 years ago. Her had some liberal views you know, my parents were not so into Linda Ronstadt from that point on, and saying that, you know, an entertainer should just entertain.
Oh.
is you know,
oh my gosh,
there,
so I'm dropping everything in horror at that statement.
their viewpoint, which
so
is
much.
A which is a you know, a funny thing with my, I mean, my parents are very conservative and they love me very much. They've always been very supportive of me, but yeah, there are people that think that entertainers should just
entertain
and keep their mouth shut.
Yeah.
Do you think that has to do with it's like you or anyone is in entertainment is filed under escapism, and so they come to you for escapism and then they don't want to any kind of confrontation from
maybe
is it
I
that?
Think you've got to I think as a entertainer you have to set the boundaries of where you know what I mean. I think you've got to say I am an entertainer, I'm a performer, whatever, but I'm also someone who's going to say, you know, some people do it, some people speak out and are vocal about political social issues, some don't. And my opinion is that as an artist, and if you know, if you look at the role of artist in society, it's to
challenge
people, illuminate people, you know. So I feel it's your duty to say, unless you're just going to go woo 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 la la la, do you know what I mean? Or, you know, oh,
I love that song.
Just or get the poppers. Yeah, get the
or else if you're in like a silly, a fun sitcom that's not good, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But actually, I think, how can you live in that? Like, it's when people say, oh, I'm not political, performance. I think everything you do is political. The very fact you said that is political. The shoes you're wearing are political, making a political statement. So I just find it, I feel also, it's always that people only ever say, oh, we shouldn't listen to celebrities when the celebrities' views don't agree with theirs, you know?
Yes. Yeah, very true,
so
actually.
So there's that.
I know, for me, I think the best thing that I can bring into this world is through, I think I'm meant, my purpose in life is to be creative and to make things that move people, that change people's minds, that make people happy.
Slightly related, but not that related. Did you feel that when you were starting out, that what you were doing with your music was transgressive, or were you trying to challenge ideas?
Absolutely. You know, we were performing, you know, in the clubs in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so the stages just kept getting bigger, but there was just like a you know, we had a big sort of lack of shame in what we were doing. And yeah, we got ourselves like to, you know, especially in the UK, we were just real
huge.
Queer and real faggoty and like loving it, you know, and like, yes. And you know, and people were loving it, you know, and grandmas were like,
oh,
grandma, like my biggest fans in the UK are like moms and nanas, like absolutely. they love me.
You know,
and I love them.
Record companies love that because they always buy a CD, right?
They were the ones that would buy, they would buy the records in Tesco's.
Do you know the time when I realized that, because I knew you, you know, here, and then I knew the band had taken off and it was really big in Britain and everything, but I guess you were away for a long time. And I was, this is, you know, years ago, I was over seeing my brother and his wife and kids, and with my mum, and we drove to like a chimp reserve or something.
And
it was fun. In like near Southampton. And we were driving along and your song Tits on the Radio came on. And the kids who were like about 7 or 8 at the time were going, you can't get tits on the radio. And I was like, how do you know that song? And they're like, it's the Sisters, we love the Sisters. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then like that you know, album was the biggest album of the year.
Sold 3 million copies.
I mean,
in the UK.
That's like a large proportion of the population.
It was in, you know, a lot of households.
Yeah.
You know? That the CD itself, it came out before. I mean, I remember just, iTunes came out after that record came out.
But it's so funny because I remember.
I feel fortunate to have to have kind of still gotten to exist in a analog world.
Because now, I mean, I always think that the music business has completely changed because of streaming. But you don't, as an artist, you don't make as much money anymore, do you, when you're recording? Do you?
Oh my
because
God,
of the streaming,
I mean, yeah, no, I mean,
a CD.
I look at music now as you know, a really expensive hobby. Mm. It's something that, like, I love to do. I love to make it. I love to record. I love to perform. Mm. And it costs a fucking lot of money. And that's, you know, one of my goals in life is just to, you know, have, be able to fund that, to make stuff and perform.
Because before, when it was CDs and things, you'd pay $20 for a CD, and you'd
make money off of a sale. You don't make any money off streaming. I mean, it really is. It is now a completely rigged system against anyone who's making music. It's very, very, very hard to make money off of any kind of streaming, and you know, Universal has stakes in Spotify. It's all loopholes, and it's just it's super sad. But it's very, very difficult to make money off of recordings.
Because one of the things I remember early on, someone said, well, what this will mean now is it will force people to become performance artists. So it force people not just to hide in the studio, but because how you earn money is by doing concerts and going around doing tours now.
Yeah, but if you're lucky, I mean, it depends on what... I have a big band, so I just mean there's me and... four other people on stage, and it's a lot of people, and it's a lot of you tour with a band, and it costs a lot of money.
It adds up,
and you know, you're so lucky because you've got a real built-in, you know, you've got built-in audiences all over the world, and it's awesome, and it's just like it must.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
No, it's like,
it's wicked. Yeah, you can go all over the place.
It's also quite good when I go to places and I think they're coming to see me because, oh, it's the cheeky chap off the telly. And then I'd like, I'm here to talk about immigration.
Yeah. Great.
I've actually, I remember one time there was these two girls when I was in a place like Feinstein's, a small place in New York, I was performing. And there's these two girls were like, you know, really drunk. It sounded like they were on Molly or something. They were just in a room full of kind of sort of rich old white people, actually. And these two girls, and then they're making out at the table and all this kind of that. And I was like, you know what, girls? It's so lovely that you feel comfortable enough to make out. But kind of, why don't you make out whilst I'm not singing? You know, why don't you make out over there in the corridor or something like that?
Yeah.
And eventually they were dropping things off their table and stuff like that. I said, you're falling off your chair. You're falling. She goes, I wasn't. I goes, you were. And so the next thing I have, I said, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. Would you just leave now? And all the audience were like, yeah.
Really?
Because also, that's the other thing. If someone's being obstreperous or noisy or something, when you, because all the audience are hearing it and feeling it as well, when you say that's unacceptable behavior because you're affecting other people, the whole place feels emboldened to agree with you.
And got it. Because you're setting the tone.
Yeah.
Right.
So you've got to guide people.
I saw Pet Sematary down the street from here, and this like college couple were, I mean, I was so excited to see the new Pet Sematary, let me tell you. I was really stoked. And they have those seats that are like, that you sort of lay back in, you know, and you put your feet up.
Like a recliner thing. Uh-huh.
And they had brought like a blanket or something with them, and uh-oh, they were doing that like. Like for a while, and then it started. Then I was, they were really kind of like melding into each other, and then I started hearing this kind of like.
No.
Oh, just like, just sort of like, just it was sticky sound. It was, it was awful. And then I was like, I'm never going to the movies again in New York. I wanted to just be like, go do that in your dorm room.
Yeah.
Like, this is gross.
It's the only place they could go.
I feel like that was probably.
Oh,
like,
do you think?
The, you know, I mean, then maybe go see like, I don't know. What is Pet Sematary?
Yeah, sorry, I don't know what it is.
It's a movie.
Pet Sematary is the Dracula of our time. That's what I just sort of like realized in this last viewing, in this last iteration of it, was that I'm a massive horror fan.
Right.
Stephen King is probably my favorite writer in the English language. Hmm. Not that I know any writers outside of the English language.
The one that is, I saw the trailer again, the It one, you know, the funny clown.
Yes.
That looks so terrifying.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen the first one. I'm not going to see the second one. But I saw the trailer and I nearly pooped my pants.
Can you handle scary stuff?
No.
Really?
No.
Like, if I was like, want to see something really scary, like, you wouldn't watch it with me? Even if I was like, this is gonna, like,
if there was just with me,
if I was like, I was like, okay, I'll bring the poppers. Like,
that's different.
I mean, turn the film off.
I mean, I like suspense-y things, and I like, what I quite like, actually, years and years ago, my friend Mark, he used to have a thing called Check the Backseat Club, and it was like, they would watch horror films, and they would always, you know, because there's always someone in the back seat under the car when you get in the car, and like that thing of, the sort of, it's a sort of a postmodern, or what is that the word, or a knowing thing where someone goes, let's split up, I'll check the basement.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yeah. That I actually really enjoy because it's like a knowing thing about styles of filmmaking and or tropes in those films that we all just go, please don't do this, come to that bit now. Yeah.
But you know, I was friends with one of my teachers when I was in junior high, and she would come to my house and one night when she was leaving, I said I was going to bed, just talking to my mom, and I went out the backyard, went to the fence, and I got into the back of her car. Oh, and just hid behind her seat until she started driving down the road. And I jumped out.
Oh, you're the devil.
It's a miracle. I think back and I was like, what was I doing? Like, that's really, like, you know, she
could have crashed the car.
She could have crashed the car. That was like,
what did she do?
Insane. She screamed and was really scared and then really upset at me. Yeah.
And then also you're like far away from home now because you're being...
Not that far. We were just down there. I just
did you get her to drop
let
you
her
back?
Go down the street.
But I wanted to ask you more about school and what you were like when you were younger.
Yeah.
So were you a kid who did things like that?
Yeah. And I was really like into horror and Zsa Zsa, and I had a really strange sense of humor, and I was kind of girly, and I was very creative. I mean, I wrote a ton. I thought I was going to be a novelist when I grew up, and I wrote fiction until I started writing songs.
I think I remember you saying that you, sorry to interrupt, that you felt like you could be different. Like there was half you didn't give a shit what people thought, but then you kind of cared what your parents thought. Was that right?
I cared what my parents thought, definitely. I was always definitely like a total mama's boy. Right. Like I was really, like my mother was... you know, my protector in a lot of ways. And my dad being, you know, so kind of far apart from me in age in a certain way, it, you know, once I started like turning into a sissy, it sort of, that relationship kind of broke down until we figured out how to put it back together. Right. You know, when I was kind of well into college.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Older, yeah, older, an older brother, two sisters. But I was basically the youngest and
all from the same marriage.
No, from two. Right. My father, my mom is my dad's third wife.
Right. Okay.
And they've been married for a long time, 45 years, something like that.
But did you all live in the same house?
We did. See, my mom was about to marry this guy named Bill, who flew planes for my dad. My dad basically ran this company with his friends in the Southwest, where they got all these World War II bombers and repurposed them, had a fleet of planes, repurposed them for crop dusting and firefighting.
Wow.
So he had all these guys that worked for him. They had a whole like airfield out in the desert.
And when you say Southwest, where is that? What exactly? Southwest?
Oh, this is outside of Phoenix.
Phoenix, that is.
So my dad retired when I was like, six or so, and we moved up to the island. But uh-huh. So he had this whole fleet of planes. But my mom was this, she grew up in the Appalachians, North Carolina. She met this guy named Bill who flew for my dad, and they were to get married. And my mom came all the way out to Arizona, and Bill was doing some kind of flight for my dad, and was had to take a plane up to Alaska or something, and his plane disappeared and was never seen again.
Wow.
Plane was never found.
And so
she was in Arizona
waiting
to get married to this man, and he vanished. And I mean, it's something that I'm so kind of fascinated by, and yeah. It's something that like I really haven't like gone super in depth with my mom about. It's just strange. It's like, what does that feel like? And not having any closure. There was no yeah. funeral for him. There was no memorial. His family was very like, his brother was hell bent on knowing that he was alive out there somewhere. They had like were in denial about the fact that his plane went down. Oh, yeah. So yeah, there was just no closure for it.
And then your mom
gave her a job at the company. And she was my dad's secretary.
So strange that like
and then they ran off to Vegas and got married.
Really?
Yeah. And they're still in love with each other, and it's
interesting that they would both mourn her ex-boyfriend because they both knew him, right?
Yeah.
And they both had this loss.
Yes.
Yeah. I
think it was a hard business to be in for my dad. I think it was very, from what I understand, it was very, very tough because between the firefighting and the crop dust, I mean, definitely the firefighting. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would lose guys every year.
Yeah.
And I just think it was a really, it was tough on everybody. So I think my dad was kind of happy to finally just sort of put an end to that chapter. But
and that's when then you moved to Washington.
Yeah, yeah.
And isn't there's a funny story about how you met Dan Savage.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, I by the time I was like 15 years old, I was like on the island. I had like, I'd gone through my freshman year of high school. I had like shoplifted a Playgirl. And
what does shoplift a Playgirl mean?
I shoplifted a Playgirl magazine off-island.
Oh,
like
I thought you meant like you'd stolen the person.
No.
right.
Just Playgirls of men with guys in it.
Yeah. It's like a centerfolds of like men with erections, and so like that was just like my jam. Like I loved that Playgirl magazine and just like memorized every inch of that. And I was also just like super into music. I was just such a music head, and I loved, we're talking like 1993, 94. Like this was just an awesome era for rock and roll. And we were in the Northwest up in Seattle, and I just wanted to get to Seattle. So I found a way to move to Seattle, where I would call into Dan Savage's radio show. And talk to him about how I was going to come out to my parents, because I was going to a private school there in Seattle, and then I would call him from the payphone from my dorm, and And I just found all these tapes too recently, which is such a trip.
Oh, you recorded them?
Wow. Record them, yeah. And there was I was on all the time. I was a regular on the show.
Really? And did you say you were you anonymous?
No, I mean I had yeah, I was Jason on Capitol Hill.
Right, right.
So,
and just because lots of people will know who.
I couldn't quite hear you.
Happy to say it again, Siri. I know lots of people do know who Dan Savage is, but just explain what he was at the time. So he had his radio show, right?
Dan Savage was a syndicated sex advice columnist, and still is a syndicated advice columnist.
It was a huge
and was one of the head editors of a Seattle weekly paper called The Stranger, and is really kind of a hero of the Northwest in a way. He's very queer, very sex positive, very controversial, very political. Mm. He is a great person of letters. He's one of the, he's just a fantastic, fantastic writer. He told me to come out to my parents. We had this long discussion over weeks and weeks and weeks. It was spring break and my parents took me to Vegas. I don't know why we went to Vegas. I don't know what we were doing there. It was just me and my mom and dad, and I was just like, I was
Vegas
16.
Weird, yeah. So this is where they got married, right?
It's where they got married. We're staying at MGM Grand, and I was just like, this sucks. Like, it's not like I can drink or gamble, And they love this, they were like loving on the slot machines and stuff, but like, I just got itchy, and I have this strange memory of meeting this like handsome boy that was my age that like looked kind of like a duck.
And dreams do come true.
We met in the arcade and we're like hanging out together, and like, I don't know if, cause I'd been out at school, I'd been out in my personal life, my parents, but not to my folks, but like, I feel like I might have kissed this young man. I can't remember, but I did go back up to the room before we were going to go see Michael Crawford starring in EFX, a big musical show that they had going on at the MGM Grand. It's a fantastic show. It was really great. I'm kidding.
I was there and I was like, oh, is it still on?
And I remember being like really kind of like, I don't know, I was just bored and wanting to just shake up the trip.
And
we were on our way to go see, my mom and I were doing our hair in the bathroom, and I told her I was gay.
You were doing your mom's hair.
We were getting ready to, we were getting ready to go out, and then we all went up. I mean, my poor parents.
What did you say?
She said that there was something, she was like, there's something that she wanted to talk about, or that it wasn't this. And I just was like, is it about, do you want to talk about me being gay or what?
And what did she say?
She froze and put her, whatever was in her hand, she put down.
Colors.
And then she went into our hotel room, which is just like, two beds next to each other, and sat down on one of the beds. And I kept trying to talk to her, and my dad was just watching the news, and she was like, your father's trying to watch the news. Like, we're not gonna make it. And oh, so we kept it like under, like it was like simmering while we were watching EFX, and then dad went back up to the room, and mom and I strolled the casino and went to the food court. We went to Haagen-Dazs, got some ice cream, and then just like had it out.
Oh.
Like, we just had it out down in the casino.
What does that mean? Like,
oh, she was just upset, and right. Just like, she was
angry.
She was angry. She was, my favorite thing from that conversation I'll never forget. And she always thinks I'm like throwing her under the bus with this. But she truly is the sweetest, most wonderful person. But I remember her saying, I'll never have grandchildren. And I was like, Mom, I was like, I'll have kids. You can have grandchildren. And she goes, over my dead body.
That's fantastic.
So it was a tense trip. The rest of the trip was kind of tense, but then I got to go back to school. I was like not living at home, so it was nice that we could.
And then you called up Dan and.
And then the night I got back, I had been working with like queer youth outreach, you know, safer sex awareness parties and stuff, and we would like throw sort of like, you know, queer parties for teenagers and stuff that I was involved in. And Dan, who was doing drag at the time, was our special celebrity guest that night. And the night I got back from that Vegas trip is the night I met Dan. And I approached him and I said, I'm Jason. I'm the person who's been calling the radio
wow.
show. And I just came out to my parents and they're freaking out. And yeah, that's how we met. And then, you know, he really became, you know, he and Terry became family to me. And Dan was just very got really kind of involved in my life and just did his best with sort of shepherding, I don't know, my mom sort of into the fold. And like, you know, his mom came into town and like sent them off to PFLAG meetings and stuff together. And he was very, he really made just a huge impact on
my life. Yeah. And PFLAG, is this parents and friends of lesbian?
Yes, of children. Yeah, children. Yes, parents of who have.
It's an American thing though, right, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's still, I'm sure it's still operation.
I think it is.
Yeah.
It's like for people who have got gay kids or lesbian, you know, it's sort of an organization for them to kind of come together and.
It's great they sort of had like a go-to person that could help them understand it rather than have to come through you.
Well, he also really scared my mom. You know, he was notorious. So like the fact that I was hanging out with this man like really freaked my mom out at first. You know what I mean? She was just like, this is crazy. You know, but really like I love thinking about this time in my life and thinking about sort of Dan's effect that he had on me because it really, you know, I couldn't have been luckier with like having an older person in like someone really smart and engaged that stepped in and made me feel valued and that could tell me about things and that we could have conversations about things that maybe weren't easy for me to talk about with other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was so lucky to have that. And I just think it's in, you know, you never know. I think with young people and I don't know, you never know what impact that you're going to have on someone's life, whether it's small, whether it's a small gesture, whether it's a bigger thing.
I think also like because I always felt very lucky that when I came out, my best friend also came out.
Oh.
So we went and did the gay thing together. Like I didn't, and so often I would see people younger than me coming out, but they would just go off on their own. They'd have to go and discover gayness on their own, you know, and so you have to go to these clubs and you don't know anyone. And the currency can quite quickly become drugs that you'll take because you're like, well, that gets me in with this lot. You know what I mean? And,
right.
and you can suddenly change paths quite quickly. Whereas like what you were saying about Dan or like someone who just has a little bit of guidelines for like,
yes.
yeah. you know, you've got, this will be easy. Don't worry, do it like this. Or I had a friend who I could do it with, who I could turn to and be like, do we want to go back to these people's house? They seem quite old.
yeah.
But like, we'll go, but we won't stay if it gets weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Like you don't, that doesn't always happen. I think.
No.
Yes. That seems lovely.
Yeah. He's back in the closet now. No, I'm joking.
So you're back here in New York City, are you?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I sort of am.
Right,
I'm here in New York. I sold my house in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And put everything, all that stuff. I mean, I got rid of a ton. I got rid of like 2/3 of like wardrobe, like all my clothes, and just I just got through every a lot of stuff out. And got put everything in storage, and I pared down to a suitcase, and so I'm living out of a suitcase now.
Do you still have your place here?
I don't.
Ah,
so no, I've been couch surfing.
So really?
Yeah.
And so what? And you? I mean, you're here.
I've been. You know, I've started. Seeing someone.
So you're here for love.
I'm here for love.
That's nice.
I'm here for love. So,
is this the same person that you used to go out before and you're kind of...
Yes, and we've rekindled. Yeah. And
how's it going?
It's been great. It's been an amazing summer. It's been so sweet. I feel madly in love.
Yay.
With this person. So I've been really happy.
Where are you right now? Because you had your solo album just out and you were touring.
Yeah. I'm just finishing
and
up.
Sisters are no more.
Sister Sisters, I don't know. If there was a, I don't know if everybody was inspired. I mean, I'd be down for it. I don't know what Sister Sisters would sound like now. I'm just not. I have no idea.
So how long is it?
Last album was 2012. It's been a long time.
And then did you tour after that? I mean, when's the last time you actually performed together?
And it's so funny because I didn't realize, you know, the last time you played together, there was no final show or anything. We didn't realize that was it. Which is kind of like sad.
So sort of a bit coitus interruptus.
A little bit. I would love to do Sister Sisters again. If there was a great concept for music, basically.
Like, it's been fascinating watching you being a big, huge pop star, right, in the Sister Sisters, and then you were doing a show on Broadway. You were in Kinky Boots, and then you wrote your book, and then you did your solo thing, and it just seems like you're like a little boy in a candy shop. There's so many things that you're potentially could eat right now.
And there's a lot of and I'm working on two. I'm writing two musicals that are both well underway. I'm writing one with Elton John, and I have written a score together.
Is that the one about Tammy Faye Baker?
Yes.
Do you know Tammy Faye Baker?
No.
Oh, she was that lady. Her husband was a big religious person, and they had a show on TV.
Televangelist.
Yeah. And she had the one where she had the big kind of, you know, eyelashes.
Yeah.
And there's a really great documentary that the World of Wonder did called The Eyes of Tammy Faye.
Yeah, they built this. Jim and Tammy Faye. They built this massive televangelism empire,
and then he got done for.
They got corruption. Yeah, they
it was
a huge rise and a huge fall. They really kind of had the rug pulled out from underneath them, and
they had a theme park, didn't they?
They had a theme park called Heritage USA.
Yeah,
I love writing musicals. Like it's, and I'm, you know, I don't know if I'm like great at it yet, but I love doing it. So. I had the idea for a musical about, even more so than just Tammy Faye, but just about Christian television.
And fascinating.
And that sort of evolved. I talked about it with Elton, you know, we're just hanging out. We were, I don't know, we just came up in conversation one night. And then I remember on his birthday, he pulled me aside and he said, I just got the life rights for Tammy Faye, and do you want to do this with me?
Wow.
Which was really exciting.
Boy inside, you go, holy shit.
I was super, super stoked. I mean, I never thought that it would happen because there was another crew, and Kristen Chenoweth was part of it, and they had been working. There was another Tammy Faye musical that had been being worked on for a while, but it just didn't. I don't know if it's ever going to see the light of day, and it doesn't seem like it was going anywhere. So, you know, so we've been making this, and it's we've got most of the score written, and I'm really excited about it.
That's and you've written him. You've written lots of songs with Elton.
Bunch of songs with him. Yeah. And hopefully some more.
Great outfit that day, I thought. Do you remember?
He always has lovely outfits, Jason. And I just love his eyes are like, he just looks like, I mean, literally is wide-eyed and
yes,
legless.
He does, doesn't he?
Well, he's not legless, but he's just so, got such a sort of great attitude to the world. And I'm so fond of him, and I wish him well. And he's always trying new things and, you know, and pushing himself. I think he's great.
Trying new things, pushing himself, yeah. And he's a lot more playful and silly than I thought he would be, because I don't know him.
Oh, really? Oh,
he's very playful, isn't he?
funny dope. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love him. Yeah, he's always such fun. Every time I see him, I say, oh, hooray.
Yes.
It's going to be a fun night.
Well, you know, we could talk about Jake all day, but kind of missing the topic when we could be talking about T-shirts and Homo Sapiens hello at homosapienspodcast.com, where you could write in to us and tell us yourselves what you think of that interview.
Exactly. Who needs to hear what we think?
Well.
Yes. Homo.
Hello, Homo.
Hello, homos.
Hello.
Hello at homosapienspodcast.com is where you can write to us. You can also subscribe to make sure that you get every episode of this podcast waiting for you in your podcast app.
I realised that I was shaking my head, but I was meaning to be nodding. Correct.
And if you'd like a... Don't open your legs like that.
I just spread my legs at Alan. It's been a long day.
I know animal psychology. Anyway, if you want to buy a T-shirt, which Christopher would like to cover his genitals with, you can get them from my website, alancumming.com/shop. There's a picture of me wearing them, and I think it's much easier. Or you could do this crazy long thing.
Or you could go to, actually technically less letters in this address, everpress.com/homosapiens.
But it's easier for people to remember, just like my name, I'm one of the hosts of this thing, /shop.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was a lovely, lovely interview, and we love you all, and we'll see you next time for another great LGBTQ icon. I'm Alan Cumming.
I'm Christopher Sweeney.
And
good night.
And you're you. Keep being you.
Buenas noches.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.